Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that holds political parties to account for arbitrary standards that it set them itself. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey Corey.
You wrote articles indeed for notenoughchampagne.com and you talked about the main political parties and the Lib Dems and you talked about what their resolutions should be over the next 12 months.
I did indeed.
And we'll start with the Conservatives, given that they are in government. The first resolution you had for the Tories was they needed to build an agenda. How has that gone for them?
Well, I've just got one. Well, let me answer that question with a question. I need you to name me a government success right now, off the top of your head.
Michael Gove banned ivory.
Okay, that's one.
In fact, Gavin Williamson being Defence Secretary and us not being invaded by a foreign power might be counts as a success.
I will give you that. That probably does count as some degree of a success. However,
Damien Hines has said he's not going to do anything in education. That, to me, counts as a success.
A lack of action is not an agenda.
Amber Rudd, no.
Yeah, you can come up with, like, you know, odds and ends in terms of policies across all of the departments, but there's no real actual plan that the government seems to have thrown together here. All of its attention seems to have gone on to Brexit, but Brexit itself doesn't seem to be going anywhere either. So at the moment, the government is spending all of its time and energy onto something which is just into treading water. That was the exact position they were in at the beginning of the year, so that hasn't changed.
They're trying to do a little bit of the kind of Theresa May sub Ed Miliband type of stuff, aren't they? And they're trying to do things like, they're trying to introduce energy caps or something.
Yeah, British Gas announces a 5% plus price increase and suddenly the Tories are all out there saying this is 100% why we are correct to try and bring in a price cap on energy companies. Despite the fact that, you know, they were calling it Marxist trash and, you know, Soviet-style economics when Ed Miliband proposed it. There's nothing there, really. There's just not a lot really going on. All of the potentially big, weighty issues that could be argued to be agenda-setting or big political wins are all linked to Brexit in some way, such as immigration. So there's no real way for them to build out an agenda at the moment.
I suppose it's a good job, then, that there are no real deep-seated problems in Britain that need fixing, like no economic growth, or a housing crisis, or a rising of sleepers.
Or police cuts and rising violent crime, yeah. Or kids going to school hungry because their parents can't afford to feed them, and teachers having to bring food with them just so they get a healthy meal.
Maybe it's almost that they can't decide which problem to solve first, and therefore don't really solve any of them.
Decision paralysis, that could be it, yeah.
Mm. Talking of decision paralysis, your second resolution, which I can't even say for sniggering, is that the Tories should work with the opposition on selected matters. Now, a few months ago, Sajid Javid called Momentum in the House of Commons, called them a neo-fascist organisation. Now, I'm not saying that wouldn't go down well with a few Labour MPs, and we're not going to name them, obviously. You can guess for yourself, can't you, Ian Austin? But that, to me, is not the voice of a government that wants to work with the opposition constructively on matters.
No, it's not. Ultimately, I think the Conservative Party is playing to its base still, which means dog whistles, which means throwing dead cats on the table. It's all about differentiating yourself versus the other potential Tory leadership contenders. And that's the sort of thing that Sajid Javid was doing when he decided to use parliamentary privilege to make that claim, when invited by Momentum to make that claim outside of the Commons, because he has refused to do so, because if he did do that, that would open him up to a lawsuit.
I think one of the reasons, or in fact one of the things that's keeping the Tory party together at the moment, is fear of a Corbyn government. Mm-hmm. That is maybe why also they're not working with the opposition, for fear of legitimising him in some way. I think if Theresa May was going to be reasonably sensible and wanted to try and bail out of Brexit in a reasonably sensible way, she could have tried to get together with the more Remainy Labour MPs and also the Lib Dems and her own kind of sensible Remainy people, and could maybe have got some sort of workable compromise in, mm-hmm, on stuff like EA membership. But that's just fantasy, isn't it? It's never going to happen.
Yeah, pretty much. The government has been very clear about what its Brexit position is in terms of the detail, in terms of like the broad strokes.
We're going to leave all of the organisations, but we want to have the benefits of all of them.
Absolutely. We're out of the single market, we're out of the customs union, and ultimately that's what's causing us the problems, is that there's an awful lot of things that the government still wants to be involved with, which, you know, are normally linked to one of those two things, if not both of them. And it's very, very difficult to kind of square that circle.
So that's 9 out of 2. The third resolution, though, speaking of Brexit, is to stop making everything about Brexit.
In some ways, they have succeeded on this, in that they keep on kicking all the Brexit stuff down the road, to the extent where, you know, we're now overdue an immigration bill. I believe there's some stuff on trade, a vote on the customs union, probably a vote on the single market. You know, all of these things haven't come up yet because they keep on moving them back to try and avoid the fallout of it. So in that way, one could make the case that they have been successful in making things not about Brexit, but that would be a very pedantic reading rather than the spirit of that resolution. Because ultimately, everything is still about Brexit, because it's defining everything the government does, or rather, it's defining the lack of anything of everything the government's doing, because it's the, you know, it's the albatross which is just swooping overhead.
I think the albatross is generally round the neck in the metaphor. That's the thing. Yeah. Like the albatross round the neck, it stops things happening. It's not like the government isn't afraid of the imaginary albatross waiting to swoop. Confusing an albatross with an eagle or some sort of bird of prey. That's not the point of the albatross.
I'm sat there and kind of going, albatross round the neck doesn't sound right at all. It's got to be swooping. It's like,
no, So the Conservatives, that makes 0 out of 3 resolutions achieved at all.
Good start.
Of the three arbitrary things that we've tried to hold the government to, which one do you think they might actually have tried to achieve by the end of the year, if any?
Stopping making things about Brexit, maybe. Just because eventually they will have to be forced into a situation where they're going to have to do things about Brexit, which means once those have been and gone, they're going to have to do something else.
I know. It'll still be about Brexit. And then that means for a while, everything will be about Brexit. There'll just be like one Brexit vote after another. Probably just before a recess,
which means they'll just be absolutely desperate for stories that aren't about Brexit, which means maybe some other stuff might get done.
So, Labour then, first resolution you had for Labour was to actually get radical and be vocal about it. Steve, do you want to talk about the National Education Service?
Let me get my soapbox. I have had this rant many a time. And for those who can't see the listeners, which is all of you, Corey has just put his feet up and he's just going about to relax for the next 10 minutes whilst I have a rant.
I get some wine.
It is no secret that I am not a particular fan of the way that this Labour leadership is going about its policies. Not because I necessarily disagree with the direction, but it's just, for me, it's all about the appearance of radicalism rather than actually being radical. Classic examples of this boil into, renationalising the railways. Wonderful. That's very, very popular. It's not actually radical. It's a middle-class subsidy. On top of that, you have what sounds like a wonderful idea and is a wonderful soundbite, which is the National Education Service, a piece of political buzzword expertise, which has emerged during the 2017 general election. And that is the wine that Corey is pouring that you can now hear in the background, listeners. He's breaking our no drinking rule.
We haven't done this for so long. Those of you who listened to our first podcast will know why we don't do this, but I feel National Education Service deserves some sort of drink.
Clearly. The National Education Service sounds like a wonderful thing. I could fully get behind that concept, and yet, what the hell is it? It is a vague buzzword. It is seemingly a backdrop for we're going to get rid of tuition fees and we're going to do some other very nice policies potentially in education, but there's no framework there. There's no point to it.
Do you know what I think it means is essentially that, like the NHS provides free healthcare at the point of use, the National Education Service is essentially from the age of 3 the age of 18, probably even the age of 21, you will get free education from the government. So you can hang things like free nursery provision, free childcare, tuition fees, all that kind of thing kind of hangs on it.
Absolutely, and I would 100% support pretty much all of those, and I would struggle to come up with a policy in that kind of area that I wouldn't support personally. But that's not what we're talking about. We're just talking about a national education service. We're now consulting on it a little bit, seemingly. Angela Rayner has started doing that. But we don't even know what that core focus is supposed to be. And we're now almost a year coming up, actually, since it first appeared as a part of the lexicon. And we still don't have a purpose to it. The NHS has a core raison d'etre, which is you will receive healthcare that's free at the point of need. That's what is missing currently from the National Education Service idea. And we seem to be nowhere in actually trying to work out what that is, let alone trying to actually work out how to deliver on it in a meaningful way. And this is kind of symptomatic of an awful lot of Labour's policies, at least the ones that we're talking about a lot, or at least the ones which are getting a lot of airplay. They all sound very, very good. There's a lot of spin there and not necessarily that much substance. And I don't think at all at this point in the year Labour has done anything to address that problem.
Actually, I wonder if you had free education services at the point of need, if it will address things like adult education.
Which is exactly what my hope would be with something like the National Education Service. But currently that's not a part of the discussion on education in any form. As we've said on previous podcasts, their focus is solely being on cuts to school funding and areas around that. You know, massively important, but it's only one facet. And what we're not seemingly seeing from the opposition in any form, and this isn't just a critique of Jeremy Corbyn, this is a critique of pretty much every faction of the Labour Party, we're not seeing any political thinking going on, really, especially in and around education, in terms of what should we be doing, what is the aim here?
Well, no, because if we think about back to the days of Ed Miliband, Ed Miliband was great at coming up with a glib soundbite like One Nation Labour, similar to the National Education Service in that sense.
Yes.
But then One Nation Labour didn't actually then mean anything, or it was the promise of Britain before that. Again, didn't really mean anything. A lot of the people on the kind of right progress wing of the party haven't really moved on from the Tony Blair stuff, really, and triangulation. Richard Angel wrote something for Labour List about how we should bring back ID cards and that might keep us in the EU, which made me want to weep. Those of you who listen to the podcast quite regularly will know Luke Jock-Davis will praise people like Lisa Nandy with the work they're doing on communitarianism.
Yeah, and there is some thinking going on, absolutely, but there's not that much of it in terms of policy development.
And it's not being fed into a wider narrative, I don't think, for the party. And again, it's a problem for the centre-left generally.
Yes.
This isn't just a Corbyn thing, it's not an anti-Corbyn thing, this is a problem that the left-wingers are having everywhere.
Yeah, all over the world, quite literally.
Second resolution we said Labour should have this year is to mobilise momentum and get out the vote in the local elections.
But it looks like momentum is mobilising, at least in areas. So I would tentatively say, actually, yes, they've succeeded on this one. Obviously, the proof will be in the pudding on the actual results day of the general election.
Or is the proof in the eating? I think we need to have some metaphor training. I think that's what I'm getting out of this episode.
Clearly.
Yeah, it's something to see over the next couple of weeks. We talked last week about Owen Jones and his influence in a lot of unseat campaigns, and I think he's been going around the country doing various things. London seems to have quite a big presence from what I can see on Twitter on the Labour doorstep hashtag. And I'm guessing organisations like Momentum generally have a lot of activist base in London, so I can see, especially with London Assembly elections, there'll be a lot of turnout there as well.
Yeah, I mean, you can see, to be honest, exactly how in a lot of ways scared the Tories are about kind of the levels of activism that Labour could be bringing out in the locals, especially in London, because they're briefing that they're expecting to be wiped out.
Mm.
Or at least they're getting that, you know, their friendly newspapers to start talking about completing a wipeout in London, not winning seats in Birmingham, you know, the sorts of places where, you know, actually they should still hold on to some seats. And as such, that gives you an idea of how bad they think things are going to go, heavily managing expectations to try and make what is likely going to be a drubbing look better than it actually is.
Okay, but tick for now. The third resolution we had was to prepare for a snap election. Again, it's hard to know. I'm guessing there is a document on the Labour G drive marked snap election. Candidates are being picked for seats. Maybe that is a sign that a little bit is happening on that snap election front, because we are going to have candidates properly in to hone the local area. And that can only be a good thing too.
Yeah, absolutely. But on other areas, it would suggest that actually then that we're not banking too much on there being an election too soon. Because we're not leading with, you know, policy announcements. We're not taking the fight with specifics, which tends to be what you do as you get closer to an election, because you need to be on the offensive as the opposition, because no matter what, the government always sets the agenda, despite us saying that they don't have an agenda currently. That lack of an agenda still would define that election. In this instance, probably in the favour of the opposition rather than the governing party, but it still defines it.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know if that is necessarily true. I think if you look at the things that the government's trying to do, like the extra NHS spending or that kind of stuff, that is a reaction to Corbynism. That's a reaction to where the Labour Party is going.
I would say it absolutely is a reaction to Labour, but most people don't actually pay attention to the intricate details of politics. They will just know, do they like the NHS in its current state? Probably not.
For Labour, should we call it 1.5 out of 3?
I'd say so.
Okay. That's interesting, because it feels to me at the moment, we talked like Theresa May had a better year generally than Jeremy Corbyn had in our last show. But actually, in terms of where we think the party should be going, feels like Labour's maybe more on track than the Tories are.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's partially down to the fact that Theresa May, as we discussed previously, has had a good couple of crises. Jeremy Corbyn's had a bad couple of crises, a lot of which are his own making in one form or another. Either by just failing to actually engage with issues properly, such as anti-Semitism, or just bungling the response to crises such as the Novichok. But a political party is more than its leaders. And I think actually Labour have probably got probably more talent in the back rooms than in the cabinet than the Tories do. Granted, with the Tories, it's not a hard kind of bar to get over, given you've got disgraced former Defence Secretary Liam Fox as one of the most senior members of the cabinet representing the Department for Trade. You've got Boris Johnson, a man who can't seem to go 2 weeks without causing a potential diplomatic rift.
Well, interesting that hasn't translated itself into a poll lead, but I suppose that's a thing for a future podcast.
Yeah, separate question.
Now, we did do resolutions for minor parties. I suppose we've kind of come up with one for UKIP, which is just to survive.
Yeah.
Now, the resolution we have for the Lib Dems was to find a way to be relevant. And sorry, Mark Pack, if you're listening. Hello, Mark, by the way. They don't really seem to have found a way to do that, do they?
No, I don't think they have, to be honest. This is the thing. I'm a hyper-engaged politico, and I couldn't tell you what the Lib Dem message is.
Vince Cable came out and said that Leave voters, was it that they were old or something? They were left behind, or closet racists, or it was something bad.
I remember the criticism. I don't remember what was said.
It was a bit of a dead cat, but it didn't really
bounce. And generally speaking, that's the Lib Dems' problem. Granted, you know, a lot of the issues come from the fact that they were in the coalition and nobody wants to listen to them anymore, seemingly. But they're not saying anything. At least nothing that seems of interest. Again, in 2017, they led off with some interesting and popular and potentially divisive, to a degree, policies such as legalising marijuana. But they've not seemed to be able to keep that up in any form.
I wonder if the Lib Dem problem is essentially they keep banking on these big long-term strategies. So it feels to me like the Clegg strategy in 2010 was, we'll go into government, we'll have a short-term pain, but we'll be vindicated because the economy will be fine and the Lib Dems will be proven to be a sensible party of government and we'll get support. That doesn't work. Then the Tim Farron strategy was, we're going to bank on being the party of Remainers, and in 5 years' time, all the Remainers will vote for us. And in some senses, that was derailed by the snap election. That wasn't really given time to come to fruition. And in a sense, they're still basically going on that strategy of, in the long term, can we, in a similar way to Charles Kennedy getting lots of support from disaffected Labour voters after Iraq, can the Lib Dems be this home for disaffected voters who are Remainers because of Brexit? It doesn't really seem to have happened.
No, and I suspect, short of something disastrous happening to in Corbyn's management of the Labour Party. It's not going to happen before the next general election.
That's a big if, Steve.
I know. Look, Iraq is actually quite an interesting kind of case study for this sort of thing. You're right that Kennedy's reputation in a lot of ways was made by his stance on Iraq, which came as a result, I think, because yes, it was a vastly unpopular decision, but I also think in many cases it was the straw that broke the camel's back. Like, up until that point, you'd got the Blair government, which was taking policies which were viewed as being right-wing in a lot of areas. It was being quite harsh on benefit claimants. It was, you know, utilising PFIs. There were lots of different areas where you could see this is where the triangulation was, or this is where Tony Blair is different from the Labour leaders before him. This is new Labour, not Labour. You know, that kind of thing. And ultimately, all of that over time builds up and builds up and builds up. And then when a big thing like Iraq occurs, that dam breaks and people just swan off. And then, lo and behold, there's a nice left-wing party in the form of the Liberal Democrats who opposed that thing, which is front of their mind, ready and waiting there with open arms. Now, you can't have that same situation with Jeremy Corbyn. He's not in power. He's not taking decisions, for the most part, which are going to actually annoy people. He's able to present himself as all things to all people, which is what all opposition leaders do. That's not in any way a critique of Corbyn, but it's just how things go a lot of the time. And when you consider that Corbyn's got an awful lot of political capital to burn by being on the quote-unquote right side of history, or the right side of a number of arguments that a lot of the potential Lib Dem voters might have, the likelihood that people are going to abandon him just over one issue, unless it's a major one, is quite slim. Now, that's not to say it can't happen. What we are seeing now is Jeremy Corbyn really testing that hypothesis quite substantially. The situation with anti-Semitism, his failure to respond effectively by most people's standards over potential Russian use of nerve agents on British soil, all are the sorts of things which can and will erode people's opinions of him. And you can see that reflected, actually, since the start of the year. Corbyn's polling numbers have shot down in terms of favourability. He went from he was at something like a +6, I believe. Mm-hmm. He's now at a -25.
Is that because of smears from the mainstream media, Steve?
Some might call them smears, some might just call it reporting. And ultimately, for things like anti-Semitism, which have been in the news an awful lot lately, it is a fact that Corbyn's response has not been brilliant. That's the sort of stuff which eventually might lead to an erosion of trust in Jeremy of certain types of Labour supporters. It does not seem like it's a likely outcome.
What you suggested there is how to win disaffected votes from Labour, and obviously Charles Kennedy was quite good at doing that. But the other reason they got so many seats was because they were also able to pick up disaffected Tory voters, or tactical Labour voters voting for Lib Dems, in a lot of the southwest Tory Lib Dem marginals, places like Yeovil, where it used to be Paddy Ashdown was the MP, then David Laws was. You'd have thought, mathematically, that Brexit could have been an issue in which they could have got a lot of votes of Remainy Tory types. But again, that doesn't seem to have happened. And maybe because of the coalition, you still don't have Labour people who are willing to vote tactically for them.
Yeah.
So maybe that should almost be a secondary kind of resolution for them. Or maybe that just folds in with the initial how you're relevant to these voters.
Yeah, exactly. And I think ultimately it's because they've either changed the strategy or they're just banking on one strategy without seemingly doing much of anything else. It's all very well saying, okay, eventually Brexit is going to fail, we'll flock to us eventually. That's fine, but that doesn't help you now. And ultimately, the results that you get now are going to determine your strength on the ground for the next general election. Because that's just how these things work. And if they can't come up with a valid short-term strategy, well, then the long-term doesn't matter.
Whereas John Maynard Keynes said, in the long run, we're all dead. Which seems like a good note on which to end this podcast.
How very positive.
Our theme tune is Plucky Good Times by Dave Depper. Our logo is designed by James Cram. You can follow him on Twitter at James Cram. We have stuff on our website, hopefully, at notenoughchampagne.com. And our Facebook page is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. My Twitter handle is PaperbackWriter.
I'm at Centre Radical.
Happy plotting, everyone.